Great British Baking Show Masterclass now. Like, that's where I'm at, because I've watched all of the episodes, like every episode of Great British Bake Off, and all I have left is watching Paul Hollywood and Mary Berry show me how to make things.
Oh, yeah.
And, like,
God.
All I want in the world is to make a Swiss roll. Like, I've got, like, all the things saved in my, like, Amazon list of, like, I can get a jelly roll pan. And I just want to make a Swiss roll, but I don't want to eat it.
Yeah.
Right. That's the thing. I'm actually have no sweet tooth either. You said that you don't have a sweet tooth earlier. I'm like, I don't. I'm more of a salty snacker, if anything.
No, so I have a shit ton of sugar cookies, peanut butter fudge, and pecan pie brownies, and no one to go and give them to. We're not even supposed to leave our house. So it's all like in Tupperware containers.
Wait, so when you said you made all that stuff and you had it packaged up, I assume you were going to be like sending it in Christmas packages. Right. Like, you just made it just to pack it up and put it in the cabinet?
Oh, I thought it was going to be
something wrong with
something.
Mistakes were made.
No, I'm telling you, you should get on. Sorry, I'm laughing because also it just occurred to me that, like, pecans are not cheap. I'm like, you just wasted so much money.
I did. And time. It literally, I was telling you guys my routine every day, being out of work. I'm like, I get done with all the stuff I have to do because we get up fairly early, you know, and I'm done with everything by 11. And wow. I can't, I've made it so that I don't start drinking until happy hour. 5.
Oh.
So from 11 to 5.
That's about me.
I have to occupy my time.
You're just twiddling your thumbs. That's what I was going to tell you. You should start baking bread, because here's why. Bread takes a long time. It takes a long time. You know, you have to go through several rises with like an hour between each rise. So it's like it takes several hours to complete, and you will actually eat bread.
Yeah, I love bread.
Yeah, make like a loaf of bread. Right? Like sandwich bread that you can use.
Okay.
And that way you have a hobby that's useful.
Not just a cabinet full of sweet treats
that you're never going to eat.
Oh my God.
My at least my hobby, I guess, is somewhat useful. I made all of our stockings. I'm making Dylan a blanket for Christmas.
Oh my God.
Crochet. Yeah.
Well,
that was my big hobby whenever I wasn't working either. When I was in that like period where I was just like working a lot of background, I really took up crocheting. I have so many half crocheted blankets in my closet. I'm like, I want to learn a new stitch. And then I'll do that for like half a blanket. And then I'll be like, I want to learn a new stitch.
Yep. That tracks.
Well, this is our last show of 2020.
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa.
What a year.
I was about to say the same thing. What a year, right? Am I right? Hot take.
Ooh. Hot take. I actually am like curious. It makes me want to go back and listen to our first show of 2020.
And like where we were at. The optimism?
Yeah.
It's going to be depressing because I'm certain that we all said things.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
This is going to be our year. Yep.
Yeah. It's going to be that. Exactly. I mainly want to listen to it just to prepare for like when we record next, you know, when it's closer to New Year's or whatever. I'm just like, I want to see. First of all, I'm not quite sure what my resolutions were. No, they didn't happen for sure.
I'm certain that mine didn't either. I don't know what they were, but
pretty sure I just said I don't do resolutions because I don't typically do resolutions.
Yeah.
So
wise. Oh, that was wise choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking about doing
pressure
this year. There's something in me that's like that's feeling like motivated. Getting up off the ground and punching back lately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because,
I have days like that, too.
The last couple of weeks have been, really, really intense. And instead of now feeling, I'm getting to the grieving process of anger. And that's okay with me because like anger is very motivating. Now I'm just like, now I'm angry.
Well, anger is active, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like a lot of the other depression phases are not active. They are like mm-mm. cry in my bed underneath Mine's my comforter. Which is I'm also not acceptance active.
Phase. Nope. It's absolutely the opposite of active. In fact, my stage of acceptance is I stayed up until 6 o'clock in the morning the other day because now I can't sleep. So
yeah.
I mean, like what I literally my brain is like, what else are you gonna do? Are you gonna get up for work tomorrow? You might as well stay up and have that cup of coffee at 2 a.m.
See, dude, I've been waking up in the middle of the night and I found this gem. I can't even wait until the very end to tell you guys because I binge watched this show called Repair Shop.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it on there, but I haven't watched it.
What is that even about? Why do you watch these things? I feel like you always bring these takes to the table of like dude. Ridiculous shit.
It is like if Antiques Roadshow fucked Great British Bake Off.
What?
Pardon?
Because it's
you're speaking
British
my language.
People quietly fixing broken things. And I mean, 3 o'clock in the morning, woke up Eric because I was crying because these two old British ladies fixed someone's childhood teddy bear so that they could give it to their granddaughter. Its name was Fred Bear. I was sobbing, you guys.
Oh my God. Sorry.
I don't know why this is so funny to me. Like, I'm laughing so hard. I feel like I'm gonna cry. Like, the fact that this is where we are.
Oh my God. You guys, I'm serious. I must have needed it because I was like full on snotting myself. The idea and they
you woke up Eric.
He's like, what's wrong? What's wrong?
Sobbing. Okay? And so now
he thinks Fred Bear.
Fred Bear. Dude, it's the best show for middle of the night anxiety watching. It is
perfect.
Because they're just quietly.
The whole world.
Methodically
just,
fixing broken things. It's so soothing.
We've experienced so much trauma that like all we can do is watch calm British people do stuff now. Yep. Like that's all we're capable of because it's like I can't bring one more stressor into my life.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's nothing is stressful about it. Everything gets fixed. The people are happy that it's fixed. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. I can't recommend it more. Go and binge it. Yeah.
Wow.
Just for the Fred Bear episode. Watch that one. Start there. And if you don't fucking love it by the end, you write me. Write Christina at myworstdatepodcast.com and tell me why you don't have a heart.
Yeah. Why don't you have a soul? Where'd it go?
Oh, it's some Velveteen Rabbit shit right there.
Oh, ugh. God, the saddest. Oh, my God.
Why did our parents read the Velveteen Rabbit to us?
I mean, I
what
loved
it. What did
we
ever do to them?
But also, like, dark.
It's hard.
Oh, it's so hard. But you know that is my, like, if any of you guys baby shower, that kind of thing, I always get a really nice hardcover book of Velveteen Rabbit. That's my favorite baby shower gift because I fucking love that story so much. I think it's so sad but also so heartwarming. It's like your scars, that's your life, and they show you're loved and all that good stuff. I love that story.
I love that story too.
What is one of your like favorite books from when you were a kid? Mine was this book called Mrs. Quigley's Treehouse.
Mrs. Quigley's Treehouse. That sounds familiar to me.
Yeah.
What was the story?
She just lived in a tree. From what I remember, I mean, I haven't obviously had this book read to me since I was a child, but I just remember this like kind of older teacherly looking lady living in a treehouse with her dog.
Mine was I'll Love You Forever. Aww, did you guys ever read that one? Yeah. That one, I loved it. I made my mom read that to me all the time whenever I was a kid. It's been slightly ruined because I think that that's the book that Damien and Giannina bonded over in the pods.
Flashback.
I remembered it because I was like, oh no, like these two idiots are going to ruin this book for me. But
mine, I had two that was constantly like making my parents read to me. One was There's a Monster at the End of My Book.
Yes.
With Grover.
Oh, yes, I love that book. I loved that book.
And then the other ones, you remember Cass, the golden bind. There was
little,
one called
little books, little
Pokey,
books.
Pokey Little Puppy.
Pokey Little Puppy. Yeah.
Like that one.
Oh, man.
Childhood.
Pat the Bunny.
Yeah. Oh.
We're just tucking ourselves in with a nice blanket of nostalgia.
Go grab your Fredbear. And
you know what? I had a bear that I loved. His name was Barry because I wasn't very imaginative as a child.
I mean, same. Mine was Teddy.
I also had a lizard named Lizzie. Mm-hmm. But Barry was an antique bear. My mom had gotten him at an antique shop, obsessed with this bear. I think I've told this on this podcast before. Whatever. But I took him everywhere with me. I did the disgusting thing that kids do, which is when they suck on stuff that they shouldn't. Yeah. I sucked on his paw, his like front paw. He went everywhere with me. And I woke up one morning. I had to have been like six, maybe. I woke up and he was filled with beads. And I woke up and beads everywhere. And I found Barry. And his head was missing. Like, his head was in the bed with me, like the horse in The Godfather. Like, it was like his bed, bare head. And so I freaked out, screamed, like ran to my parents' room, bawling.
Yeah.
So my mom took him to get repaired, and she took him to a friend of ours who was a seamstress, and she fixed Barry, and I was very grateful. However, unlike your repair shop, she put his head on backwards.
Oh, no.
So his like feet and little arm muscles were going the wrong way.
Oh,
and I think
God.
He's still like that. Like, I think he's still like that at my parents' house.
Oh, my God. Barely. Oh, my God. No, I had to. I think my bear. Hold on.
I still have mine. Oh, wait. Are you going to go get yours? I'm going to get mine. Hold on.
Oh, my God. I'm so jealous that you guys have your berries.
This is Bear. It's so weird how you anthropomorphize things, because I'm like, in my heart, I know that he is stuffed. Like, I get it. However, do I sometimes feel guilty that he is in a closet on a shelf?
Same. Wait, same.
Okay, hold up your bears.
So, yeah, this is Teddy. He's pretty threadbare.
Are both of your bears named Teddy?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
This is Ted. Teddy. Hi, guys.
Hey. Oh, my God.
Bonus content. That's hilarious.
We are so stupid. I love my teddy bear.
Me too.
Yeah, and you know what? You can't. The thing about the closet, like, you have to make sure that he's not like behind something.
No.
He has to be able to breathe.
Yes, he's sitting up and he's got a little pillow to help.
Yeah.
He's like,
you guys are making me feel like a really bad teddy bear mom. Because, because Barry is probably like in my parents' attic somewhere.
No, and watching that episode, the fact that, okay, so it's the grandparents and it's their daughter's bear, and she moved to Australia, and the bear was wood stuffed, so Australia wouldn't let it in because they have really strong customs. So, and their daughter just had a baby, so the grandparents bring the bear in so that it can be restuffed with like polyester so it can get through customs and fixed up because it's worn. It's like, you know, 30 some years old. And so when they see the bear all like fixed up, they're like, it still looks like Fredbear. And seeing not just the grandma get choked up, but the grandpa.
No. Oh, That's
I
it.
Was like, old man tears.
Old man tears are the
with that
end of me.
They were like, it looks nope. just like Fredbear. Let's have a cuddle. And
oh,
I was like,
oh.
Your 2020 heart is not ready for Fredbear.
Can't.
Oh, God.
Can't prepare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this was a surprisingly wholesome opening.
I know.
I mean, for us.
Exactly.
We might as well end this year on something wholesome, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. I mean, we have to, because our fuck, marry, kill from the last episode was extremely upsetting.
Oh, I'm upset thinking about it.
Me too. I regret that entire conversation.
I know. Maybe we re-record that whole thing.
Oh my God.
Well, we do have a new patron this week.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Also, and this is my worst date. I'm Christina.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Cassie.
Hi.
I'm Ted.
And Ted
and Teddy.
So I want to give a huge shout out and thank you to Madeline Place for joining us on Patreon. We are so excited to have you. As always, if you have any suggestions, please feel free to reach out to us and let us know. We'll have your rewards to you as soon as possible.
Also want to give a shout out to a lot of love from the Drinkarinos group on Facebook. They're always incredibly supportive, not just of the podcast, but just in general. And I just feel like they deserve a shout out as well.
That is one of the only things that I miss about Facebook. Like, really, there are like
that one and Meowderinos.
Meowderinos, Drinkarinos, and our group.
Are
the things that I miss, the only things that I miss about Facebook. I don't care about anything else that goes on in there, to be honest.
Legitimately, I have whittled my feed down to my 5 minutes of Facebook time is pretty much just filled with Meowderinos and my worst date. That's it.
Yeah,
like just scrolling through those things and then, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, that is something that I can say that I feel like I can be grateful for about this year is like I no longer have the energy to be entertaining things that don't bring me joy.
Yeah.
You know, like just, you know, consolidate your life, curate your feed. If something's making you feel like shit, let it go.
Amen. Yep. That's really good. Like year end advice. Just let it go. There's so much that I think is going to be forever changed by this year. I was talking to Eric the other day. I'm like, do you know that first week that you have to go into the office and work an 8-hour day again is going to be exhausting?
Like, oh my God.
Yes, it is.
Horrible.
I actually think that probably the first little bit, it will feel novel again. And there will be so much like catching up, being able to be around other people. But that is going to wear off super fast. And like then it's going to be so annoying. But I actually really do think that most businesses, at least offices, are not going to return to a 5-day, 9-to-6
office
That's hour structure.
The biggest thing that I've seen on Facebook is a lot of people letting go of jobs this year, and they're searching for something with more work-life balance. That they're just like, is so toxic.
You have to.
It was 24/7. Like, I just have to Americans, find something else.
Americans especially are really bad at that. Like, more than any other country, we don't value taking time off. We have this, like, hustle and grind and work yourself into the ground kind of, like, culture. Yeah. And if you're not doing that, then you're not being productive enough. You know,
I think that there's something to be said about that, too. As I sit here looking at pictures of my travels and thinking, like, man, I would travel more if I had more money. The problem, other problem that we do. Oh, I'm so sorry, guys. Got to take my drugs. The other thing that we do, I think, as Americans is that we don't take that time off because we don't have the monetary opportunities. We all have to live, you know, the means in which we need to live our daily lives is is so consumed with. I mean, most people live paycheck to paycheck. So yeah. to save to do something, you don't, it's not even about taking the time off. It's about like, what are you going to do with the fucking time off you get? Where are you going to go? Because yeah. you have no money extra.
There's a story in my inbox that is filled with flights. It's all over Europe. It takes place. I'm like, first of all, are you guys James fucking Bond? Like, what right? the fuck? They literally like fly back and forth. They're like Estonia, Belgium, Germany, like all kinds of stuff. I'm like, I cannot even fathom that lifestyle. Do you know how long I would have to save? I mean, it's just different. It's
yeah.
different.
Fuck.
Yeah. I mean,
that version. I want that life.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, everybody wants to travel. Everybody wants to travel. That's the thing. Somebody tweeted that actually recently where they were like, I like to travel isn't a personality trait. It's a class marker. Because it's like everyone likes to travel, dude. Like yeah. we all love to do things. You know, it's just what most people do. There are occasionally people who are like, nah. Hard no, I'd rather stay in my house. But
home.
Typically, people like to travel. It's that what you can maybe afford to go on one good vacation a year. And then for people like us, whose families don't live near us, my vacation mm-hmm. time and money is spent going back and forth to see my family. Like it's not, I don't have the extra to be going jet setting all over the place. You know what I mean? So
yeah. Where would you guys go right now, time and money and pandemic notwithstanding?
Aside, right. I am literally looking at pictures of Rome and Cinque Terre on my wall right now, and I'd go back to Italy in a fucking heartbeat, in a minute.
Nice.
Well, I had really wanted to go to London this year. That's where my brother is.
Right.
And I still, even though I'm getting married, I really want to do solo traveling. It's something I've always wanted to do, kind of travel by myself. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to go to the UK, like by myself, hang out with my brother, and then, you know, go off, check out Ireland and Scotland as well while I'm there, you know.
Nice. Nice.
So
I think it's so funny to consider like solo travel. Like I am such a, I think probably because I've traveled so much for work by myself that I like the idea of vacation travel by myself is so like, I can't, I need people in my life. I need someone with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if I could go anywhere right now, notwithstanding, I think I'd go back to Paris. Mm. Yeah. I know I've already been there and there's so many other places in the world, but yeah.
I know that's how I feel about Italy, but I'm like, oh man, it was so great. And there's so much left to explore there, you know?
Ugh. Yeah. I mean, there's so many places that I want to go. Like, I want to go everywhere. Mm-hmm. I want to visit, you know, every continent, not Antarctica, but
true.
The other ones, you know? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's manifest that.
Where's one place you've never been that's like number one bucket list vacation spot or travel spot?
Hey, Hawaii for me.
Yeah.
I've never Hawaii's never been, but
the most beautiful place
crazy
in the world. I mean,
yeah,
that is one place where I feel like people are not exaggerating when they're like, no, it's paradise. You're like, oh, no, it is. It is.
Yeah. I like being warm and stuff too. So just the idea of just like traversing all these different beaches and seeing volcanoes and just, I would love to.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't been to the UK and it is high on my list of places to go. But I don't know if it would be the number one place that I've mm-hmm. never been to that I would want to go. You know where I've always wanted to go since I was a little girl and would be Egypt. On my like bucket list is Egypt.
And when I said Egypt. It.
Oh, is that what you said? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Seeing like the pyramids and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, that would be dope.
That's so funny because that was also on the top of my list. But I think my number one is Machu Picchu. I want to go to Machu Picchu.
Yeah.
But that's the nerdy archaeologist in me too, who's like, I want to go see the pyramids. I want to go see these ancient structures.
When I was a kid,
I wanted
I wanted to be an Egyptologist when I was a kid, and then I realized it was science. And I was like, oh, my grades will never be good enough. I was like, no.
Dude, for Machu Picchu, I actually feel like I have been there because I was on Tinder in LA. And that was legitimately like everybody's fucking profile picture.
That was a real trend for a while. Like the Machu Picchu picture.
Yeah. It's like, the same angle. Why was everyone going there? The same one. And I'm like, I guess I feel like I've been there, actually.
What Mad Men firm did they hire, did Machu Picchu hire to get everyone to travel there? There's like a 3-year period where everybody went to Machu Picchu. And I'm like,
an ancient lost city. Like, how fucking rad is that? And like the Andes Mountains, like you're just, it's so incredible. Like, and it feels so lost city. And we were those kids who grew up with like Atlantis cartoon and, you know, like the, so I think that there's that part of our generation gap that is like literally like adventurers at heart, you know, and Machu Picchu feels very Lost City, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, well, who should we fuck, marry, kill this week? We're
I don't know.
Ending what are the 2020.
I was going to say, what's like a big 2020 retrospect? What were like our three big hitters? And, well, the coronavirus, lockdown. No. Kill.
Yeah, it's
kill,
kind of
kill.
Hard because there wasn't a lot of pop culture stuff. Unless, do you want to fuck, marry, kill Tiger King?
Oh, God.
That is 2020 in a nutshell. Dude, that one dude got a glow up, though. Did you see him when he what's his name? Oh, I forget. That feels like 2 years ago when we were watching Tiger King. Oh my gosh.
We could do like characters from like Netflix shows. Netflix, which kept us alive.
Oh.
So we could do like Schitt's Creek. We could do David. Right?
Oh, he definitely helped keep us alive. We can't kill any of these people though.
Well, right. What other show? I mean, I guess we could do Tiger King.
That was part of it.
We should just do the shows in general.
Okay.
Okay. Schitt's Creek, Tiger King. And we're talking about the shows, right? That kept us alive. And Great British Bake Off.
That's what I was going to say.
Right.
It has
there
to
it
be.
Is. Yep.
Well, I mean,
okay. I think we got easy answers here.
I think we have very easy answers. I mean, we're all killing Tiger King. Yes, agreed.
Obviously,
yeah.
I mean, you are in for a wild night with Tiger King, but you are definitely coming out of it with some kind of VD.
Yeah, something. Yeah. Oh my God, you're itching for days.
Yes,
like you're just scratching. Like, why am I so itchy?
You find a weird rash under your armpit afterwards. You're like, how did that even happen? Yeah,
tiger fur.
You don't want to fuck around with that. And I'm gonna marry Great British Bake Off.
Yes.
Look, you're gonna be fat and happy and cozy and warm forever and always. Just
and Paul Hollywood.
Soft British accents.
I could be with that for a lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't really have a sweet tooth, but like you said, there's like breads and stuff. So
they make meat pies. Lots of savory dishes happen on that show. And then I'm gonna fuck Schitt's Creek and friend them. Yep. We're gonna be friends with benefits.
Fuck buddies. That's for right. Sure.
Yes.
Dude, and there have been some like hot British Bake Off contestants too. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that?
Mm-hmm. So back with Paul Hollywood.
Aunt Selassie, did you guys see that season?
Yes.
Ugh, hot
and can bake.
And come can on. Bake. I follow him on Instagram. He's also passionate about men's health and men's mental Good. health. I like it. I love it. I'm here for it.
I love that.
We're married. that we just married him. So there we go.
Yeah, we married all of them.
Yes, all collectively.
You're all mines now.
And there's not a bad person on that show. Like, I have seen every season. If there is somebody who's, like, not a nice person on that show, they're edit gone quickly. All that shit out. Or they take them, right. or they remove them from the show. Because I've been watching forever, and there was only one time when this guy, he was Scottish, and he blew up because someone took his ice cream cake out of the freezer and it melted.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
But even then, like, he blew up and threw the cake away or whatever. But even then he like immediately apologized.
Right.
And was super chill about it afterwards. So like, and that's the most scandalous thing, the biggest blow up that's ever happened that I've ever seen on Great British Baking Show. If you guys know of something else, let me know because I've never seen it.
Yeah, same.
Well,
no, I'm doing the same thing as you, Keegan.
Yeah.
Are we all?
Yeah.
Are we agreed? Is there another answer? I mean, you could also be happy married to Schitt's Creek for the rest of your life. You could be.
I was wondering if Christina was going to marry Schitt's Creek. That was the
only thought about it. I thought about it, but yeah, it's just, I agree with you. I think a fuck buddy situation is the best sitch for Schitt's Creek. And I just want to be married to a gentle, calm, methodical, baking, hot, British.
Mm-hmm. Someone's going to make me things. Earl Grey tea in the morning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I'm down for that. You can't turn that down. You can't waste that kind of energy on a one night stand.
Nah, too good for that.
Yeah, we're making good choices in 2021.
I like it. I like the way we're leading into 2021.
Dude, I did see a tweet and I saved it because I was going to send it to you guys. But it was like, if you've ever been sexually attracted to Pete Davidson, don't be afraid of what's in the vaccine. I was like, that's the old me. We're leaving that me behind in 2020.
That's right. Mistakes were made for sure. You guys want to take five and we'll come back with stories?
Yes.
Sounds good.
All right. Cool.
And we're back.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to start us off because I've got the crazy in love, which is freaking bananas. I'm very ready to share it with you guys. Hopefully you don't know it because then it'll be even crazier. But so we got this in our email. It's another like holiday story submission. So I figure we'll close it out. It's still technically the holidays. But she says, hi, ladies. So I binge heard your entire podcast in the beginning of the pandemic. I've caught up and it's an extremely bittersweet moment.
Oh, man.
I understand that feeling.
I have been there with podcasts before where you're like, well, what do I do now? It's like finishing a book, you know, where you're like, what did I do with my life before this?
So she says, I've been single for the past 2 years and gone on a handful of dates pre-COVID and a few now since the holidays approaching. This is my story. As you know, meeting a new partner's family is extremely stressful. I was dating Jose for a couple of months and it was quite serious. We decided to meet each other's parents and let me disclose that we were friends for a very long time, but I always keep my circles, family and friends, separate. Weird, I know, but it's always been like that for me. So
whatever works.
I kind of feel that way. Not that I'm embarrassed of my family, but I just like, I don't know. I've kept my family and friends separate too, for the most part. So everybody's different. So he met my parents. It was a success. My mom loved him from the beginning and my dad took a little warming up since I'm the baby. My parents always hosted the Christmas party and invited all of our close family members. Jose was so graciously welcomed by my parents, and mom couldn't stop bragging. My other family members were dying to meet him. So they're hyping him up.
High bar. The bar is high.
Christmas arrived. He spent time with his family during the day, and he came to my place afterwards. I told him a summary of who was going to attend and the whole 411, who's married, divorced, children, the whole nine yards, like prepping them. They're like, don't say anything about this to this person. They're very sensitive.
You know, I always thought I'd be very bad at that. You always see that in movies where they give like politicians like binders. And yeah. They're like, here's a picture and a description of everybody important that you have to meet tonight. I'm like, do you know how quickly I would forget that information?
Immediately, yes. If not sooner.
I am that person that sometimes like gets introduced to somebody and then immediately forgets their name.
Same.
Me. I'm like,
hard me.
I have to listen better. And then I immediately feel bad. And I'm like, ugh.
And then you're in your head about how you're not a good listener and haven't heard anything they've said to you in the past like 20 minutes.
It's like, back to it. Anyway, we make an entrance and say the usual greetings. Soon I start to introduce people's names and so on until everyone has been announced. Next thing I realize, my uncle starts having a conversation with him and says, wow, it's nice to finally meet you, Roberto. Sin is constantly talking about you. The entire party has quieted down and are frozen because they don't know how my ex will react. My ex was quiet at first, but quickly realized it was a joke. Like, he's one of those jokey uncles. That's
That's not a funny joke. Like, I don't. What like is that. The joke? What's the joke?
That the joke like is. The joke is that his name is Jose.
Right. So I'm like, no, are you just picking another random?
Yes.
Name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't like that. I don't like the casually racist uncle. We all have one. Okay. Yep. But they're not funny.
The joke is racism and it's not funny.
Yeah. That's my Uncle Tom for sure.
I like that you just called your uncle out on this podcast.
I did.
Yeah. Full name.
Tom, if you're listening.
I don't think that he gets my podcast on Parler. So.
Oh, no. Oh!
I think I'm okay.
I don't think we're being shared at all on Parler, if I'm on
hand, dude.
And that's fine.
I'm okay with that. So afterwards, everyone was just laughing. And throughout my relationship, we started to call my uncle Roberto. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depends on how much of a cringeworthy story you wanted. It wasn't an extremely awkward or traumatic experience, but it was a bit funny. My sister learned from this experience, though, and told her family they're never, ever going to meet her significant other for this very same reason. Thank you so much for taking the time to read this little story. Aw, well, thanks for writing in.
Valid, to be honest. There is always that anxiety when you have, because we, look, families are weird,
mm-hmm.
okay? Mm-hmm. And yes. Especially when you get all of them mixed up together, and especially if your family is like mine, where we're from all different parts of the country, you're going to have like differing viewpoints and opinions and worldviews. And when you get them all together, like you do have to warn, you got to warn people.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to let people know.
Yeah, but all right. At the same time, like your family, like that's the thing. I'm like, they got to be cool too.
Yes, absolutely.
So as much as like you warn your significant other, you're like, family, be cool.
Be cool, man.
Be
just
cool.
Just be
but
cool.
But that's not Uncle Tom's way, okay? To
no.
be chill.
No.
Like,
no.
He is no chill.
He's not trying to be PC. No, he doesn't need your PC bullshit, Christina.
You fucking snowflake. Okay, I got my story from Reddit and says, I just come back from college and was having a night drinking at the local watering hole when I noticed the place had a new bartender, new attractive bartender, short hair, nice tattoos that were clearly leading to interesting places, and an electric six shirt. Fuck yes.
All right.
Okay. So I start making a bit of conversation, and much to my surprise, we seem to really hit it off. And not just bartender as everyone's best friend until they leave hitting it off, but really cool conversation. She starts hinting at if I'm seeing anyone, and I say no. She immediately reaches into her pocket, starts writing something down. On top is the number of the apartment, and these are directions. We are having a party on Wednesday night, and you should come. True okay. enough.
I did not All think right, that number- it was going to a party. I thought she was straight up just being like, be here after my shift ends. I was like,
yeah,
oh,
I was like, whoa,
here's my dick appointment. What would you think? Wednesday comes around. I'm dressed and ready to impress. I head over to her place, knock on the door, and there she is, looking amazing. She smiles and hugs me, grabs me by the hand, and drags me through the party until she gets to this big dude. Jonas, this is my roommate, Jeff. Jeff, this is Jonas. I do the whole pleasantry thing, but when I turn around, she's gone. I mean, like, poof, gone, like Batman. Not knowing anyone else, I just keep talking to Jeff. Seems like a good guy. Suddenly he stops me mid-sentence and says, "You're not gay, are you?" "No."
"You really should let Liz know that."
She had apparently set up the entire party as an excuse to hook me up with her roommate. I'd been on a blind date with a dude and didn't even know.
Oh.
This poor roommate.
Sweet baby angel. Okay. The year was 2004. I had just moved to a smallish city for my first job post-college. I was 23 at the time and didn't know anyone in town, so I went online and found a chat room for young locals, my shy attempt to make friends. I spent a lot of time in this chat room. Quickly, which, been there. I mean, back when chat rooms were new.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Quickly, I met a guy who seemed pretty cool. Let's call him M. M and I clicked right away, and it wasn't long before we had broken off of the main chat and started our own private room where the two of us could chat for hours on end and uninterrupted. We exchanged pictures, and M looked to be in his early 30s or so. Looking back, he always seemed to have ways of deflecting telling his actual age. He would make references to things, but never straight up said how old he was, and for some reason I didn't ask. Anyway, eventually, we decided to meet IRL. We lived about half an hour away, and he said his car was in the shop, so if I wouldn't mind coming to meet him, he'd take me to some of his favorite spots in his hometown. Not knowing anyone and eager to get out of my apartment and on a real date, I agreed. I got done up in a way that I thought was classy enough for a date, but casual enough for wherever we were going. In 2004, this meant a satin cami top, low-rise jeans with embellished back pockets, and platform heels.
Girl.
100. Yes. I know you.
You just painted a picture. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you have chunky highlights and a bump it, too? Because...
Ooh, girl.
You remember the bump it?
Oh, yes. Lip gloss.
Yeah, some frosty eyeshadow. Okay. He told me to meet him at a pretty famous chain restaurant. It struck me as odd at the time because he said he was going to take me to some of his favorite spots, but whatever. I got there 5 minutes early and took a seat.
My mom takes me here.
Like, Applebee's? Okay. I got there 5 minutes early and took a seat. When M arrived 10 minutes later, I almost didn't recognize him. He looked nothing like his pictures. It was clearly the same person, but aged at least 10 years.
Okay. Oh.
He had lost most of his hair by then. Nothing against balding guys. It was just a shock. And was wearing ripped jeans, sandals, and an Ed Hardy t-shirt.
No.
This also tracks for 2004.
I draw the line. I'm so sorry, but those Ed Hardy or Affliction shirts. I just, if we were to fuck, marry, kill, I'm sorry. Like, that is an automatic kill for me.
I mean, yeah. It looks like somebody just got out a bedazzler.
Yes. They're like, I'm a rock star.
Are you?
Are you?
He greeted me with the ever classy, sup, girl, and leaned in to kiss me on the cheek.
Okay. So we have an aging man. Probably high 40s, in ripped jeans and an Ed Hardy shirt. Sup, girl?
I want to peel my fucking skin off, actually, right now.
For that some reason, that was very triggering for Christina. Like, I saw it just run through your body.
Oh, my God.
You're red. You're full red.
Guys, it gets so much worse. This story.
Oh, my God.
It's
so
bad.
I'm already so triggered by this. I went on this date. Oh, my God.
Oh, I will say there are two things in this story that remind me of things that happened in our earlier episodes. Mm-hmm. So brace yourself.
Oh, God. Okay.
He leaned in to kiss me on the cheek. Immediately, I was blown back by the smell of his breath.
Ooh.
Oh,
no.
On top of that, his shirt reeked of cigarettes. He casually looked around the restaurant and then said something to the effect of, "This place is actually lame. I want to take you somewhere else." I should have bailed right then, of course I didn't. When we got outside, I started walking over to my car. He stopped me and suggested we walk, since where he wanted to take me was, quote, just around the corner. I assumed he'd taken notice of the fact that I was in heels, and so if he was suggesting a walk, it must be pretty close, right? Wrong.
Oh, no.
No.
I shit you not, we walked for 45 minutes.
Oh, no. No. No.
Sir. Sir.
By the time we got to where we were going, my feet felt like two nubs. He also didn't seem to notice or care that I might be in pain because he walked at an alarming pace and I struggled to keep up. During our walk, he barely said anything to me, which in hindsight was probably a blessing. When he finally stopped walking, we were standing in front of a country-themed bar that had swinging saloon-style doors. From the outside, it looked as if the place...
There's fucking peanuts on the floor, aren't there? There's no. Goddamn peanuts on the floor!
From the outside, it looked as if this place had not been cleaned in a very long time.
Ugh.
We go inside, and the place smells like stale beer and tobacco smoke. The clientele is about what you would expect. Think Dog the Bounty Hunter meets Duck Dynasty. I was very out of place.
Oh my God.
M greets the bartender and those sitting at the bar with great familiarity and doesn't bother to introduce me, which I have to say didn't bother me at all. He orders us two Bud Lights without even asking me what I wanted and leads me to a high top table. When I sit at the table, relieved to be finally off my feet, I look up and am immediately horrified. I should say that my family are good old New England WASPs. I hadn't even been to the South until college. Hanging on the wall in front of me was the biggest Confederate flag I had ever seen.
Oh, no.
No. Run. Run, girl. Run.
This is a throwback to our first episode of my worst date. I was immediately uncomfortable and looked around to notice that, unsurprisingly, there was not a person of color in sight. I thought about leaving at this point, but the prospect of getting back on my feet and walking back to my car at that moment was too much. So I sat there, I sit there and sip my beer. M, on the other hand, had already finished his and ordered a second. He had started a very loud and raucous conversation with some of the locals and hardly remembered I was there. 30 minutes later, my feet were feeling better and my drink was almost gone. When I start gathering my things to leave, M takes notice and pulls me into the conversation he is having.
No.
I don't remember what prompted this, but I will never forget what happened next. M reached into his mouth and removed the top row of his teeth.
No!
Oh, my
no.
Oh, God.
No. 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 Oh, I thought this was going to be like chew or something. He said his teeth.
Proudly displaying his gums to me and laughing obnoxiously.
Listen, Pawpaw, get out of here.
This is the kind of thing that makes you question who you are as a person. That you were able to spend hours talking to this person online. I would really reevaluate everything about myself and my life.
I had a rock bottom date like that where I was like, I don't need to go out with everybody I match with. And we just need to take a little breaksies and come to Jesus because, you have those conversations where somebody, you're like, we are so incompatible. How did I miss this? before, like, it does. It feels like a judgment on you more than yeah. the other person, because you're like, wow, wowie, wow, wow. And also about the teeth, listen.
Wow.
Dental work is fucking expensive. Not here get to, it. Like, no. shame on that whatsoever. He has However. Teeth,
but you don't take them out.
But exactly. Exactly.
There's a time and a place. Like, we had one of our early episodes. I think, Christina, you told this one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where on a date, a guy removed his teeth at the table. And it's like, my no. dude.
My teeth.
No.
No. No.
No. Nothing about this date I'm is okay. Sweating. Literally nothing about it is okay. She says, it was too much. I hightailed it out of there and nearly ran back to my car. When I got into my car, my feet were throbbing. I took off my shoes and drove the 30 minutes home barefoot. The second I walked in the door, I logged out of the chat room and never went back. I never Amen, saw girl. M again. And to this day, I've never returned to that town.
Oh, he ran her out of town.
He ruined an entire town for this woman. She's like,
and she's not wrong.
Oh, he took his teeth oh, out.
My oh. God. And was like, oh, no.
Can you
no.
imagine?
No. I hate it. I hate this.
No. Oh, my God.
God damn.
Oh.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Okay. Y'all ready for this?
Dun, 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 dun,
exactly.
Dun. I feel like I need a glass of wine.
You kind of do. Do you want to take a second?
Yeah, I'm at the point of acceptance, so...
Like go for it.
So, is it too soon for wine?
Nope. I mean, I'm drinking a Michelada right now, so if it's too soon for you...
Yep.
Wait, what am I going to do?
Work? I'm hitting up a claw, so... Okay. So, my crazy in love this week, I have actually already gotten my Christmas present from Eric, because we're terrible people that apparently as soon as they arrived needed to give our Christmas presents out immediately. And he
that
got,
is us.
He got 100. Me AirPods. So
nice.
I
this episode will be out by the time well, is after Christmas, but I yeah. got the same thing yeah. for Anthony too.
Nice.
I got him AirPods.
Yes. So, yeah, it's been great because I have so much anxiety when I have to go out to go to the store and be around people now, because things are like apocalyptic here in LA. And so I put my fucking AirPods in and I've been listening to the Dateline podcast. Nice. So I'm like, I always need to maintain a list of crazy in loves, and Dateline never disappoints. Keith Morrison is always going to be there for you.
Always.
So this one, I don't know if you guys caught it or not. It's a classic Dateline episode called House on Pitch Pine Crescent. I also got a lot of information. There's a great Toronto Life article by Michael Lista called House of Horrors. Which,
and we know we love a local article.
Yes. Mm.
The best.
So I'm going to start off by telling you about a love story. Bridget is 16 and she's a prominent young actress in the early 60s. She's doing productions for Stratford in Canada, and she meets a very handsome 18-year-old Bill Harrison, who's working in the costume department, and they fall in love. And it
I got
is
my
like,
eye on you, Bill. I fucking this is a Dateline. I see you, Bill. I don't know what you did. But you did something.
Exactly. Dateline always has you like suspicious of everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody. Now, it's pretty incredible because this was the early 60s. Bridget is white and Bill is black, but they like their families accept like love, all kinds of stuff. So even though they do encounter shitty things because it's a shitty world we live in, for the most part, it's like a pretty incredible love story. They're not able to have kids. They get married in 1969. So in 1973, they adopt Caleb. And it's a really happy family. Bridget left acting soon after that, wanted to focus on education, and becomes like a really incredible force within like the Ontario neighborhood. Like everyone knows her. She's works as teacher, principal, like working within the education system. So she's kind of strict. She's very passionate, that sort of thing. Bill is like the yin to her yang. He's very gentle, calm, easygoing. And he said from the beginning, he's like, my son is my best friend. He was that kind of dad. Like, Bill and Caleb were like two peas in a pod. And Bill was like the buffer of the family, whereas Bridget and Caleb would kind of, like, bump Caleb heads. Was kind of a handful of a kid. His aunts and stuff were like.
That's what you get when you adopt kids.
He was like, the family like loved him, but he was mischievous. He was like a very active, mischievous kind of kid.
I need to like caveat that, and you know, just in case you're not. Like,
I was gonna say, if you're a brand new listener, you should know.
You should know that I'm adopted, and I make a lot of adoption jokes. So yeah, just kidding.
Well, and when talking about this family, like, yeah, and if you always have one parent who's like a little bit more strict.
Yep.
Right, and like that has to be that way. Like someone has to enforce the rules, and
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean. By all accounts, like Bridget really wanted Caleb to focus on his education, but it just wasn't really for him. Some people just school is not the answer. So after high school, he went into the workforce and he was working at a warehouse when he meets this really freaking cute 19-year-old named Melissa. And they just immediately started having lunches together and they were like inseparable. Everyone in the family were like, oh my God, they're like made for each other. They're super in love. Within a very short period of time, they end up getting married. Two kids soon follow.
Holy shnikes.
Melissa is just like, well, Caleb at that point was 27. Melissa was 19.
Oh dear.
And she was telling him like, hey, I had to have an ovary out. And like, I need to have kids now, or who knows, like I might not be able to have them in the future. And Caleb really wanted to start a family. He had said like being adopted and not knowing who his birth family was, like having questions about that made him want to start his own family. So that's kind of how they got hot and heavy, fast and furious right from the jump. But it soon turned into kind of a mistake. Like it went super acrimonious. Like, they were just young, fighting about money constantly, all that shit. And in 2005, it culminated in this huge argument where Melissa said that Caleb hit her. So Caleb got arrested and spent 3 nights in jail. And then that was the end. Like, Caleb had to move back in with his parents, which, as we know, is like, like
not
that's,
ideal.
That's a hard move. That's a hard move. And so Caleb is just distraught at losing his family. He starts drinking super heavily. And it's in July of 2005. He goes to a party and gets completely wasted and then drives home, hitting a taxi head on. He kills the taxi driver and grievously wounds the three passengers. So, not good. This is Bridget and Bill are so upset. They're so pissed. He's got to get his fucking life together. And then he spends the next 3 years basically like he's let out on bail. They're charging him with involuntary manslaughter, that sort of thing. It spends 3 years going through the court system, constantly being postponed, pushed back, like that sort of thing. But finally,
I gotta tell you, if I was the family of that cab driver, I would be pissed.
Yeah. Right. And meanwhile, like they're splitting custody. And Bridget is driving Caleb to his job. They're trying to make it through. And so, like, sometimes, like, Bridget and Caleb and Bill will have the kids, and sometimes Melissa will have the kids. He is finally convicted in 2009 and sentenced to, get this, 18 months in jail.
Oh, my God. For killing someone.
Yeah.
And he was out on bail for 4 years, and he gets a year and a few months in jail. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yep.
Very cool and good.
Yeah. So it's just Bridget and Bill right now. But sometimes they have their grandkids because they're still splitting the custody. And one night, Bridget comes home from a conference at like 9 o'clock. It's late at night. She's expecting Bill to be home, but the house is dark. So she's calling for him. She finally finds a room, like this powder room. It's one of those half baths on the first floor. It's locked. So she picks the lock and she finds Bill inside. He's dead.
Cold to the touch. I really regret saying that Bill did anything at the beginning of this story. I'm sorry I jumped to conclusions.
Aww. They had been married for 40 years. Bill was only 64. He had no major health problems. Now, here's the fucked up thing about Canada at this time is that even though it's 2009, there is a whole fucking rabbit hole that you can go down learning about the fact that they didn't really have a forensic pathology department. Any old person could be like, he dead. It was usually like a doctor, but forensic pathology is a specialized field. And there's this whole scandal you can go down reading about this Dr. Smith that for years was like the person for forensic pathology in Ontario. And turns out like he didn't know dick all about it. Like, oh, and shit. So there were tons of convictions tied to him. That based off were this wrong.
Douchebag.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. So
2009, you guys. Yeah. Like, that's insane.
Is that terrifying? I was like, holy shit. It was really interesting. So I started reading up a lot about that, but not to prolong the story anymore. But that's kind of where we're at right now, is they just found out that guy was a piece of shit and we're just starting to get their act together. But they're looking at this case. He has bruising on his neck and his sternum is broken, but he's just dead on the floor. And they decide.
So it looks like somebody tried to give him like CPR or something?
Yeah. They
like those types of.
They look at it and they're like, well, it's not really suspicious. I guess he just had a heart attack.
What do you mean it's not suspicious? Like he had a heart attack and fell sternum down on. What?
Real hard?
Yeah. That's what they said. They were like, either like he slipped and fell and that's what like broke his sternum and gave him the heart attack, or he had a heart attack and slipped and fell. And they're like, that's how it happened. In his tiny bathroom. Cool. Also, who locks the door to the bathroom when no one's home?
Nobody.
Yeah. Exactly. No one. It's very strange.
Yeah.
But no. I don't even when people are here.
The thing about that is you could lock the door from either side. So it's enough there's enough questions where somebody should have been like, it's suspicious, like let's look into it.
Like they when you say that, you mean it's the kind of lock that you can turn and then shut the door, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay. That's what I was thinking too, Keegan.
So this is a very sudden death. Bridget is distraught. They've been married for 40 years. She has nobody either to comfort her. Caleb's in jail. Like, it's just really fucked 40 up.
40 years. Mm-hmm. Imagine being married to someone for 40 years. Like, terrible.
Yeah. So, but Caleb actually gets paroled only 3 months into his sentence for good behavior.
Are
so
you?
Wow.
So he does 3 months. Yeah.
I'm sure it's not the point of this.
Wow.
But what the fuck? Like, that's...
Yeah.
Oh, man. The amount of rage I would have if I was related to that cab driver. Wow. Yes. Anyway.
So this is in April of 2009. He's out by June 2009, and he's helping his mother, like... put the pieces together.
I mean, I'm glad that Bridget had that. I'll say that. I'm glad she wasn't alone. Like, that is good for her. But
so wait, was he in jail when his dad died?
Yeah. Yeah. He was in jail. And so Bridget is like, Bridget and Caleb love each other, their mother and son, but they butt heads. It's a contentious relationship. Like, they get under each other's skin, and Bridget is having to drive him everywhere. She's having to like do everything for him and for his kids, because obviously his license has been taken away. And So, and obviously, like, they're getting into arguments because, like, because it's a shit right. situation. They're angry. They're upset. That sort of thing. But they're making it work. And so in April of 2010, so this has been a year, they're kind of settling into a routine. Bridget takes Caleb to work, drops him off, and then drops the grandkids off at school. And then their grandkids are pedaling home from school, like on a bike. And they come in the front door, and that's where they find Bridget.
Stop.
Dead on the stairs. She is on her back. She is bruising on her neck. And so police are like, this is weird. Did she fall down the stairs? Also, that's weird if you on did that neck? You land on your back. You know what I mean?
With so they're choke like, marks. Does yeah. the stairs choke her?
Yeah. They're
and
like,
the
this
kids
is-
found her.
And the kids Oof. Found her. Yeah, they found their grandma. So they also can't find anything. Like, really overwhelming. They're like, this is really weird. This is another death in this house a year later. It's really suspicious.
Both of them have bruising around their neck.
Yeah. They weird. Just can't. Yeah. They don't have, like, a real forensic pathologist. And believe me, the police have come under big fire about this.
Well, yeah. Because you're just, like, all shoulders. You're just like, I mean, seems weird, but what are we going to do about it? Like, I don't know, your job? Like,
yeah, it made me think of Just Didn't Make It. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, no. Right. They just wrote that down on the death certificate.
They wrote suspicious, shrugged their shoulders, and did dick all about it. Nothing.
They just actually wrote the shrug emoji out.
Like, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know.
It just says all shoulders.
Yeah. And so they question Caleb because he seems to be the one to benefit from this, you know, with life insurance, he gets the house, that sort of thing. But he was at work. And so then they just close the book on it. They're like, well, she must have fallen.
Do you, okay, the amount of true crime that we consume and the amount of Dateline that we watch, does it ever freak you out how many people get away with murder?
Oh, yes.
Because it's like, you, yes, we're listening to this story, which I'm assuming has some kind of conclusion, but how many don't? Like, how often do police just be like, eh, I decay, and then, like, no one ever looks at it again, you know?
Yep. It just sits in a dusty box on a shelf.
You know, I think about that sometimes when I'm, well, mm-hmm. not anymore because I never go into places that are crowded anymore. But I used to, especially when I was like traveling. It happens to me the most when I'm in airports because it's like a lot of people from a lot of different places where I will think to myself, like, how many people on this plane have killed someone? Like, I think that because I'm like, you have to be interacting. Like, statistically, I feel like you right. have to have some interaction with someone who has killed somebody.
Ooh,
like, wow. I think, you know, just
I
like,
think how many people have I run into who are actually part of the CIA?
Ooh.
I'm just saying.
Oh, wild. My gosh. So, like, Caleb is super depressed from being under suspicion. But he begins to try to pick up the pieces. He lost both his mom and his dad within a year. I mean, he's trying to be the dad for his kids. He's really trying. He ends up like coaching Little League and doing what he can to be a good father for his kids.
Cassie's face looks very suspicious.
I'm full of sus.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Well, 3 years pass. And they've fallen into a routine of split custody. By this time, they're both dating other people. Melissa has moved on and is dating this guy named Christopher Fattori. Caleb is, you know, dating another girl, and things are fine. They're not technically divorced yet. Melissa got confused and thought if you weren't together for 2 years, you were automatically divorced.
This is so not someone who should have gotten married, okay? Like, if Okay. I don't like making blanket statements like, hey, don't get married when you're 19. But don't get married if you're 19 and don't know how divorce works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
that's a good rule. That's a good rule. I got, yeah. Nailed it.
So she had it. They had a ceremony, like her and Christopher, where they just said they were married, I guess. And
wait, what?
Exactly.
They just had like a weird civil ceremony.
Yeah. And they went on and they had, within that time, they were also like popping out babies. So it's working out. People are moving on with their lives. Time heals, that sort of thing. And it comes to August 23rd, 2013, when Caleb was supposed to be at work one day. Like, he was doing a group project and his coworker's like, this is really weird. He is always on time. Like, super weird. He's not answering his phone. So they go to the house on Pitch Pine Crescent.
Come on, Pitch Pine.
And this cleaning lady is there. She cleans the house for him, but he always tells her, like, don't worry about my room. Like, my room is fine. So she's like, I don't know. I haven't seen him this morning.
But I'm really going to need this house to be demolished by the end of this episode. Like, it's for real. The juju in that house.
So the coworker goes into his room and they find Caleb there, dead. With
Does
a fractured
he have bruising
sternum
about the neck?
And bruising about his neck and his face.
This ghost that lives in this house.
Exactly.
That's killing everybody the same way is
fucked up. So they call the police. The police get there and they're like, there's like three of them on that respond. They're like, holy shit, we've been here before. And this is when they finally start to look into what the fuck is going on.
Wow.
On
like,
Pitch
I really.
Pine Crescent.
It's right. It's so fucked up that they were like, you know what? Three might be too many. I think we should probably dig a little deeper. Like,
this whole family got murdered. So, well, now we need to look into it. So they obviously, like, can tell that Caleb has been murdered. He's been asphyxiated. Like, he dead. They're like, okay.
He didn't fall down on his bed that way?
Yeah. You sure? So they're like, let's look at who would want him dead. And that's immediately when they start to look into Melissa. And they notice really weird coincidences around all the other deaths that happen. For instance, right before, like, Bill died, Melissa and Chris were planning to move to Nova Scotia, and they wanted to take the kids,
and
which
Caleb
is against
was like, nah.
Custody agreements, that sort of thing. So the day Bill died, the day they discovered him, they fucking bounced. They went to Nova Scotia with the kids. They abducted the kids. And freaking Bridget had to get family court involved saying, like, hey, parental abduction, you can't fucking do this. And so the day before she was supposed to testify in court is when she was murdered.
Hmm.
And then Caleb.
Who would have thought that those dots would have been connected sooner?
Exactly. Hmm. It's like super easy to see. Chris Vittori runs a Facebook page called, like, I hate Caleb Harrison. He's a murderous piece of shit. And fucking
what?
Just posts memes and all kinds of stuff about Chris or Caleb being a piece of shit. He runs a whole
honestly,
Facebook group.
Wait, honestly, the three of us could have investigated this better.
And would have.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, there is our constant, and still, y'all, it takes years for Canada to, they end up, listen to how they investigate this. Listen to this. Oh, no. Listen to this.
Oh, no.
I don't think I can.
They hire somebody to contact Melissa and pretend to be like a generous benefactor, like part of a mom group that just loves to send money and help out.
They hit her up with like a
families.
Hey, babe.
Hey, like, DM. Hey, boss babe.
Yeah.
So they give them like gift cards, and then finally it escalates to they give them like a trip to like a theme park.
Okay.
So when the family is out of the house.
Wait. There's so much to unpack here. First of all, would you not be like so suspicious? Like people, if good things
no
start
one gives
happening
you free
to me,
shit.
Yeah.
If you murder somebody, why would you trust anyone?
If good things start, with my life as it is, if too many good things in a row happen, I'm immediately like, what's the catch? Immediately. If somebody was just offering
I'm
me
totally
money.
I'm totally opposite that. I'm like, yeah, thanks.
No, Cassie. No, I think Christina's on the same page.
But of course, I've never killed anyone, so I don't know.
Yeah, so it takes them forever. They're out of the house.
Also,
so
that's their solution is that they're like, hey, we think these people murdered some people. The only way to get them is to give them stuff.
Yeah.
What?
So then they bug their house. But like people that murder other people don't just like fucking sit around and talk about the murders. So it takes them years to like finally like trick these people into like a couple snippets of conversation.
Look.
And finally they feel like they have enough to charge.
I really gotta say,
whoa,
this chick doesn't seem like a mastermind. Like she doesn't seem extremely smart. I really feel like you probably could have just taken them in for questioning and cracked them. Because like, well,
that's what finally happens is they arrest both of them. They put them in different rooms. It takes 13 hours. Christopher confesses to murdering Bridget and Caleb, but not Bill. And so they end up catching them on tape later with him saying, hey, I confessed to these. And I told them that I only told you after the fact. And she's like, why'd you do that? And he said, so you could be there for our children. So police prosecutors allege that Melissa obviously was the mastermind getting her boyfriend / fake husband super worked up about her piece of shit ex, and they've ended up finding Google searches on their computer what happens when the grandparents die in custody, like all kinds of stuff that super incriminating. They end up being found guilty for Caleb and Bridget, but not Bill. And so they'll spend 25 years in prison. But
you know what? I feel like they could have pushed a little harder and probably gotten Bill as well. Like, you expect me to believe that he died the same way and that was just an accident?
The problem is that the evidence that was kept from it was like so minimal, and he was cremated. So there just wasn't. Or wasn't enough. But by the time Caleb's death came around, they had gotten their pathology game a little bit better. And so
I'm going to need every cop involved in this to be fired immediately. Like, this is who's in charge? What's happening here?
Yeah.
Did they get reprimanded in any way for the way they handled this case?
I mean, there are like countless, like, the family is like, my belief in the justice system is irrevocably broken.
Oh, like, yeah, of course.
You just thought, especially in 2009, you would be like, oh, we have science and we have blah blah blah, like if you murder somebody they'll catch you. But to see the level of game that it took to get away with murder in Canada, it was just like, these people, it was like so obvious when you look back at it now, but nobody even looked at it. Nobody gave it a second thought.
A girl who didn't know how divorce worked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Bested you.
Yeah.
In the game of murder. Like, that, you should be embarrassed.
Yeah. How fucking bananas is that?
That's those poor kids. Oh, my God. Like, there's no amount of therapy that is going to heal those wounds of both of your grandparents and your father being murdered by your stepfather and your mom, who are both now in prison.
Right. Like, and what's fucked up is Caleb's will was saying, like, if something happens to me, I want the kids to go to my cousin. Like, he had a godparent in place. I want my cousin to raise them. Nope. They're with some member of Melissa's family.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Mm-hmm. And so the Harrison family, like the extended family, is still fighting in family court to get them to honor Caleb's wishes.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fucking bananas. Wow.
I'm furious.
Yeah.
God, this episode started off so calm.
I know. If you want to commit murder, apparently you can go to Ontario, Canada. It's a 19-year-old who doesn't know how divorce works. And
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, woo, wee wow.
Yeah.
Oof. That was a good one.
Thanks.
And I didn't know that one. And I've listened to a lot of those Dateline, so wow.
Dateline classic, man. Dude. And I'll tell you, the Toronto Life article was really fucking well done too. Super. I mean, I love a good like hometown journalist.
Same.
That's always the best. Mm-hmm. It really helps fill in some more color from the Dateline. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Wow. That was a twisty windy.
Yeah. So what are you guys watching this week? I already kind of told mine at the top. Well,
other than the baking show masterclass, I've been watching a few things. So I did start The Ripper on Netflix because it's about the Yorkshire Ripper.
Yeah, I started it too. I need to be in a better headspace. It was too dry for me at the top.
Yeah, I liked it. I watched the first episode. I did like it. However, I will say, if you're not in a good headspace, it is a little bit dry. But in addition to that, it will fill you with fury over mm-hmm. the way they talk about these women.
Yes.
Because there's one reporter who is, I'm like, in the year of our Lord 2020, you're still going to talk about these sex workers this way? Like, he's a reporter and he still talks about them like, you know, well, at the time, you know, it was just a story. You just, when you hear about these women being murdered, you just move on from it. Wow. Like, it's so terrible. Mm-hmm. But there is one, like, badass.
Human lives don't matter as much as other human 100%, lives.
That's basically what he says in not so many words. But there is one badass lady journalist, of course.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. In at least the first episode that I saw. I am watching.
Is it a documentary?
Yes, yeah. Documentary series.
Oh, okay.
I am watching, speaking of, Murder on Middle Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is good. Dude. It is interesting. It is triggering me. I think just because of my own history, I'm having a hard time watching it.
Like, right.
A difficult time. But it is interesting.
Trying to talk to his dad, you're like, oh my God, how infuriating is it?
Him talking to all of his family members.
All of his family.
Like, I've been in a situation where I've had to talk to family members about really difficult things like that, and it is very stressful. Like, and so watching it is kind of stressful for me. But it is well done, and I would recommend it. The last thing that I watched, God, I watched a lot of shit this week. Told myself I was going to read more. Apparently not. I finally got HBO Max on the Roku.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what made me watch this. It like popped up in like suspense thrillers on HBO Max. It is a 1987 movie that I am going to make you guys watch for Crazy in Love.
Oh, no.
Because it is.
God damn.
Oh, no.
I've never heard of this movie before. I don't recognize a single person in it, but it's called The Stepfather. It is the most 80s thing I have ever seen. And Christina, Amazing. It's like a family annihilator situation. I am gonna make you guys it's hilarious.
I can't wait.
And I'm there's so unnecessary excited. nudity. There's peen 2 minutes in. It's
you said peen.
Oh man.
Oh God.
Well, yeah, I also watched The Undoing, which Donald Sutherland. Is there a scarier person than Donald Sutherland?
Have you seen Angrier Eyebrows?
No.
Never.
Never. I liked it. The last episode, I was fine with it too. Eric was like, well, this makes me hate the whole series. But I'm not going to spoil it. I think overall it's worth watching. I loved all the acting in it. So yeah.
Right on. Haven't seen it, but the way you guys have gushed over it, I'll watch it when you guys watch Bosch. So
ouch. Nice.
I've been watching, honestly. Okay. So I feel like the last person in the world to have seen this show, because I feel like this show was like really, people loved it. Chuck, I've never seen it. And I started watching it and I am fucking full on addicted to it. It is so funny.
It's cute.
It's so well put together too. Like, I love all the characters. I don't know. It's really fucking good.
I've never seen it, but show. People loved it, and it went on for a really long time. So yeah, there's got to be something there.
Mm. Yeah, it's pretty great. And the chick face that's in it is the girl from Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, Yvonne Stravinsky.
Yeah.
She's good. She's good.
I love it, and I think it's hilarious, and it's so well put together. And I love all the characters. Like, they do. The writing is just so well put together. It's just really good. Anyway, so if you haven't seen Chuck and you want something to binge, I recommend.
Yeah, don't take any of my suggestions that are just going to bum you the fuck out. Watch Chuck.
No, watch.
Yeah, I needed something light.
Well, if you guys have stuff that we should watch, stories to tell, just want to say hi and happy new year, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's myworstdatepodcast.com. And we love you so much.
Cheers.